2 weeks ago, I gave a sermon, The Next Best Time. And I used the analogy of a quote that was in a book that I had mentioned, how, when's the best time to plant a tree? Well, 20 years ago. When's the next best time? Well, obviously today. Last week, I gave a sermon, and I tried to illustrate how many times God allows us to walk through difficult circumstances, and He intervenes just in time. He's there, but it's after we begin to look around and we possibly even begin to wonder. Someone told me afterwards, he says, well, you know, God is never early and He's never late. You know, He's always there at the exact perfect moment. Got up this morning, pulled in the newspaper, took a look at the headline in the Spokesman Review, and the headline on the Spokesman said, strike three for economy. I guess they didn't have room for the word the, you know, it was a short headline, but strike three for the economy. What happens with strike three? What happens in the state judicial system when they say strike three? Three strikes and you're out. You go to prison. The three strikes that they listed in the article were shrinking employment, because the job statistics were recently released, plunging home prices, to which we, frankly, in the Northwest have been less impacted than many other parts of the country. Melvin Rhodes lives in Lansing, Michigan, and it's the worst housing market in the United States. And they bought a house 2 years ago. 2 years ago. And he commented that with the depreciation of the home over the last year and the projection for this year, that they expect to lose 50% of the value of their house in 2 years. It's the worst location for housing depreciation in the United States. Plunging home prices was strike two, depending on which way they counted, front to back. And the third strike was the economic sector in danger of freezing up. In fact, it said repeatedly in the danger of freezing up. Because something happens, and then they try to work it out, but then something else happens, and they try to work it out, and something else happens. So again, headline was strike three for the economy. Howard Davis gave a sermon last week. I'm assuming it was in Portland, but he had sent a note out in the ministry, and we were discussing some of these things. But Howard Davis, in his sermon last week, compared the global economic system to the Titanic. And he went through, and he laid out, he said, I studied economics out of college. And he took some classes outside of even Ambassador in economics. And he talked about his business experience and what has taken place. I think we picked up a little echo on the microphone. I think it was doing okay. And he said the Titanic sunk in just 3 hours. 3 hours. During the first hour, they didn't even put down a lifeboat because they didn't seem to think or know really what was even taking place. So the ship was going down in 3 hours, and the first hour, not so much as even a lifeboat was lowered to the water, because they didn't realize the danger they were in. Howard said there was only 16 lifeboats on the ship anyway, and yet it was set up for 64. Well, they didn't even feel they needed the lifeboats, because the ship certainly would never sink. You look out the window and the sun's shining and the cars are driving and people are going to shop and everything is going fine. We're going to dinner tonight. We have the option. I mean, it looks to us, it looks to me, if you just looked around, I could go out and do what I please, do what I need to in various ways. We all can. The people just did not believe that that kind of destruction could take place. 750 people lived, 1,500 people, actually a few more than that, died. Howard Davis said that Portland is the only major market in the United States where there has still not been a housing decline. He said they're putting their house on the market this week. He says if they don't sell it in 60 days, in his opinion, they will lose $100,000 in value on their house. I mean, that's just what he has said, what he has experienced, what he believes. he did say, in his opinion, the entire international system of finance is at risk. And he says, I hope I'm wrong. He says, I really hope I'm wrong. Now, brethren, forewarned is forearmed. You ever pull up at night against a deer standing out on the highway? We have a saying, the deer in the headlights look. And the light hits the deer, and the deer looks up and stares at you. They spotlight deer to hunt at night, to poach. Because the deer will stop and stare and freeze. Freeze up and not move. And they'll just stand there. And if you just kept on driving, maybe you could just drive right on over the top. What have you changed in the last 2 weeks? The last 2 weeks since I gave the sermon, the next best time is today. What could you write on a piece of paper that you have done in the last 2 weeks since I gave that sermon? Mike and I were talking, coming down. I says, you know what? I could take a piece of paper and I could write down exactly what I have done myself in 2 weeks. And I won't leave that to be public information, but we discussed it. And I gave him three or four specific things. I said, I did this, and then I did that, and I took this action, and I did this as a result. I could list on a piece of paper, since I gave my own sermon, specific things that I have done in response to what it was that I said. And I would just ask you, do you not believe that there is risk? If you do believe there is risk, what have you done? What has changed? Or is it the deer in the headlights where all of a sudden you just stop and freeze? Oh no, look what's coming my way. We need to live our lives in order physically and spiritually. God is the one who determines what our lives in that respect ultimately will be. What is going to happen and what he will allow, we need to be looking to him. But brethren, I want to also, more than anything else, I want to suggest when we look to God, when we do our part, we certainly need to do our part, and then I would say, be not afraid. Be not afraid, because we are God's people. Psalm 23, so fundamental, verse number 1. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures, he leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul, he leads me in the paths of righteousness for his namesake, for his glory, not for ours. And yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Because you are with me. Your rod, your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Even though you walk through the valley of the shadow of death, he says, I will fear no evil. Doesn't mean evil's not there. Doesn't mean there isn't risk. But when you trust God and look to God and put yourself in his hands, then we need not fear evil. Hymn 143 in our book, I'd like to read it, because it says, be not afraid, my people. And frankly, sometimes, as I've said, the words of our hymns to me are what I think of even sometimes before the scripture itself. Maybe I should always think of the scripture first. But because we sing these in praise to God, in worship. Be not afraid, my people. I am your God who watches over you. I don't sleep, neither will I slumber. Sons, be not afraid of man. Be you not afraid. What can man do to those whom I love so? What can man do to those who fear my name? I am the Lord, protecting you from danger. Through the mountains quake and roar, be you not afraid. I will return, with me you shall be always. My steadfast love shall not depart from you. I am the God of Abraham and Jacob. Lift your heads, redemption's near, be you not afraid. If serious trouble does indeed land in this country, redemption's near, be you not afraid. Psalm 118. The Psalms, the scriptures that were used in writing that hymn, are listed at the bottom of the page. Psalm 118 and verse number 1. It says, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, because his mercy endures forever. Let Israel now say, his mercy endures forever. Let the house of Aaron now say, his mercy endures forever. Let those who fear the Lord now say, his mercy endures forever. You know, let Mike Imes, with a hole in his leg, squirming on the table, say the same thing. Each of us, as we go through our trial or our struggle, do we really trust God? And can we really say, be not afraid? Trust in his mercy. I called on the Lord in distress. The Lord answered me, set me in a broad place. The Lord is on my side, I will not fear. What can man do to me? Hebrews 13. Again, these were listed as scriptures from which that psalm was produced. Hebrews 13, verse 1. Okay, let's take this in the context of Psalm 118. Trouble, trial, what can man do to me? But this is then connected. Well then, let brotherly love continue. In the midst of that, let's not forget to act in a loving manner, especially one to another. In trial and test, that is when our love is going to be tested the most. Those are going to be the times when we will need each other the most. We're a church. We're a community, a spiritual community. We are the family of God in this flesh. Don't forget to entertain strangers, so by so doing, some have unwittingly entertained angels. Remember the prisoners as if chained with them. Mike said that he learned more in his pain than if he would have not had the pain at this time in his life. There's something came out of that. It says, remember the prisoners as if you were actually chained with them and in jail yourself. Develop the empathy to that level for those who suffer and those who are mistreated, since you yourselves are in the body also. Marriage is honorable among all, the bed undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers God will judge. Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have, for he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you again. So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What can man do to me? Going back, quoting from some of the same places in Scripture. Luke 21, one of the other passages that was used in that hymn. Verse number 25. Talking about the end time, the return of Jesus Christ. It says, there'll be signs in the sun, the moon, the stars. There'll be distress on earth. On the earth, distress of nations, with perplexity, the sea and waves roaring, men's hearts failing them from fear and the expectation of those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven will be shaken. When they see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. Now when these things begin to happen, when the process begins to play out, what does it say? Be afraid? No, it says, look up. It doesn't mean just the fact that when Christ is in the clouds and we see him. It says when these things begin to happen, begin to look up and recognize that Christ is on his way. Look up. Lift up your heads, because your redemption draws near. It actually says to be encouraged, because our redemption draws near. I want to read you something that every youth corps participant that goes to camp in Nigeria has to also read and be aware of. I just pulled it up last night. I once a year it goes out. I don't read it in between. But it's the travel warning from the Department of State in regard to going to Nigeria. And you know what? If you read this, you would never go to Nigeria. You would never go to Nigeria. But my wife's been there a couple of times. Megan and Derek have each been there a couple of times. We're going back this summer with Derek and Michelle, and the Youth Corps members are going too. But first they got to read this. And then they have to stop and assess what their attitude or approach is going to be. This travel warning is issued to warn U.S. citizens of the possible dangers of travel to Nigeria, and to note that continued instability in the security in the Niger Delta region. Now, I hope Dari is much, much too busy to listen to my sermon, because he really doesn't like it when I read something like this. It really bothers him, because it makes Nigeria look so bad. But, you know, when we're there, we travel openly. We rejoice with the people. We laugh and joke. I mean, to us, it doesn't look like this on the ground. But this is real. You know, it's not like we rewrite the report just to somehow make it worse. Violent crime committed by ordinary criminals, as well as by persons in police and military uniforms, including those people who are in the police and military, can occur throughout the country, tends to peak between November and January during the holiday period. You know, you got to have some Christmas spending cash, I guess. You pull it in off the street. In 2007, over 150 foreigners in the Niger Delta region were kidnapped from offshore and land-based oil facilities, residential compounds, and on the public roadways. I'm only reading you little clips, but the whole report reads about the same. Crime in Lagos and Abuja is an ongoing problem. Visitors and resident Americans have experienced armed muggings, assault, burglary, kidnappings, extortion, often involving violence. Carjackings, roadblock robberies, armed break-ins are common in many parts of Nigeria. Traveling outside the major cities during hours of darkness is not recommended. Visitors to Nigeria, including a number of American citizens, have been victims of armed robbery on the road from the Murtala Mohammed International Airport, both during daylight and nighttime hours. Now, I don't think twice. Dari doesn't think twice. Dari lives there. Take my family there. You can focus on the problems. We could write an article on Hurricane Katrina and the city of New Orleans. Dari was reading international reports that came out of New Orleans after the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, whatever that was, and he said, "You guys all right over there?" I mean, there was trouble. And they focused on the trouble, and they wrote it up, and they sent it over there, and he said, "Boy, you guys all right? It looks like it's coming apart." Enforcement of aviation safety standards in Nigeria is uneven. That's a kind term. Civil aviation in Nigeria continues to experience air accidents. Mentions a few problems with crashes here. I remember an Air France jet one time crashed into cows on the runway. I thought, man, you know, cows just walking across the runway as it came in. Incidents included fires on planes, collapsed landing gear, planes veering off the runway. It's serious, but to some people, it sounds crazy. After each occurrence, aviation authorities may temporarily shut down the domestic airline involved, ground a number of planes, close the affected airport. Flights to Nigeria, including international routes, are often delayed or canceled. Travelers should be prepared for disruptions to air travel from, to, or within Nigeria. SAC, travel by any means within Nigeria is risky. For essential travel, official Americans in Nigeria balance the risk between domestic air and road travel by using direct flights on Virgin Nigeria or Aero contractors to city service by those carriers. I can say, if you read that, you'd say, we're not going there. There's no way I'm going there. You know, like I said, Dar wrote and said, "Are you guys okay?" after reading some articles about New Orleans. People who watch TV in Nigeria probably think we all live like they do in Hollywood. You know, that's what's portrayed. That's what is out there. Again, Youth Corps program. I want young adults participating in the program, frankly, who are comfortable with a little bit of drama, and I consider it Dari and my responsibility to see that they don't get any. I mean, that's just how I look at it. If someone is really concerned about being there, I'd prefer maybe they not tag along. And then my intent and hope is to make it work as well as possible, and generally and specifically, it has. But here's the bottom line. God's people are in Nigeria. God's work is being done in Nigeria, and we have the great fortune and blessing of having a part to play. So the work can be done, so that we can contribute, so that we can go over there and share with our brothers and sisters that are in that wonderful place. I love Nigeria, and I love our people who are there. And so this summer we head back, my family and I, the Youth Corps members and I. Cody and Bobby Kitts are going back. They've been there twice. Rachel Lukey is going with Youth Corps. Jamie Veal is going with Youth Corps. You won't necessarily know those. You might know some. Just to remind us, in terms of trusting God and looking to Him and crying out to God for His intervention. You know, the finances this year are rather tight in the church. We budgeted this year, I think, for the year, $25 million. The council minutes that were put out show that we are projected to make our operating expenses for the year, which is about $23.5 million, which means the increase we projected for this year in income was 7%. And the 7% is not expected at this point to be realized. Now it might, but that brings the operating expenses right down to where there was very, very close to almost no increase at all. Now finances are very tight. Expenses and flights to Nigeria are very high. Last year, our tickets were incredibly expensive. And part of the problem was the final selection for the program was late enough in the year that it put pressure on the selection of flights that were left and available. We prayed about that. I went ahead even before the final selection was made on Youth Corps, and I got our tickets for my family 2 weeks ago, and I got a very reasonable price. In the course of the Youth Corps selections now being finalized and those members being notified, and we begin to now line up their flights, I went back and I checked the very same flights that we are taking to see what they were today. We're talking 2 weeks' time, and those flights had gone up $600 each. Now, that's not because air travel is inflating that much. It's because the small amount of slots that were available at the cheaper price are already gone. The plane is still flying, there's still seats on that plane, but the next tickets are up $600 each. But here's the point. God gave us what we wanted. He gave us exactly what we wanted. We are flying exactly on the connections we want, and He gave it to us at our price. We did our part. We got in line early. We made our selections, but God made provision. Be not afraid. As God says, be not afraid, my people. I like to do what I can for Dari. I love Dari. I love his family. But I like to do what I can for him. And one of the things he is really into is books. He's talked about how he actually went without food at times, not starving, but without meals, in order to use the money when he was in college or something to buy a book, because he wanted the book more than he wanted his meal on that particular day. And so I've taken him reference books that he can use to study and teach from. I've taken him history books, again, that he can learn from and use to illustrate as he teaches. I've taken him mountaineering books, because everybody needs mountaineering books. So he has a pile of adventure books and a pile of research and history books. Dario, though, has a fault. He likes fiction. Now, I've prayed for him, but he still likes fiction. I don't understand that. I don't read anything that's not true, except in the newspaper. But I just don't read anything that's not true. If it's not true, I can't use it. What am I going to do with the funnies? I mean, where am I going to use that? How will I illustrate? But he still likes it. So he had asked me for a favor because some years ago he read some cheap Western novels. And the author was J.T. Edson. Now, I'd never heard of J.T. Edson in my life. But he had some J.T. It's like Louis L'Amour. And this was J.T. Edson. And so he said, well, can you find some J.T. Edson Westerns? And I said, well, okay. I said, but this one is on you. Dari, I have some of Dari's money that I've kept for him that he sent me back with if he ever needs to buy something. And so, you know, when I take him something he can use that is valuable, I take it as a gift. If I take him something that I think is frivolous, he pays for it himself. So J.T. Edson, I went through all the thrift stores in town, check out all the old books and all the stacks of paperbacks. There was not a one in town. I went to the paperback sales store where they buy and exchange paperbacks. They didn't have one in the store. I'd never seen one yet. I thought, well, that's kind of strange. Well, one day, Grandma was down and her back was bothering her, and Michelle called around and found where there was a walker in one of the thrift stores, and I could go down and pick it up because we needed it for Grandma. So I said, fine, I'll go down and pick it up. I ran down, got the walker, exactly what I wanted. On my way out, I had to go through a store. I'd already been through the store, and I walked by the book section again, and I look, and here was a row of 10 J.T. Edson Westerns. I was a dollar a piece. That's what they would sell. I was stunned. So I grabbed them. I said, all right, I'll take them. Put it on his account. Now, I thought, well, maybe if I looked around, I could find a few of these old things. And so I type it into the computer, and it brings up, you know, all this information. And all of a sudden, here's 25 J.T. Edson Westerns on Craigslist. And this was the week before the Tacoma weekend. And I looked on there to see where it was, and they were for sale. And again, it's about $1 a piece, just what cheap old books go for. And the location was right over by Tacoma. And I said, well, now that's funny. I'm going to Tacoma this weekend. I haven't been there for who knows when. Don't know when I'll ever go back. But I'm going to Tacoma. So I called the man and said, I'll take them, hold them for me. I'll pick them up myself. So we did. We drove out there. Ray M. Heiser made the trip with me. We had a great time, went to all the activities, drove out Sunday afterwards, right over toward the base of Rainier, just a little, again, to the south, met this guy, picked up the books. What was interesting was, you know, if you bought books from one person and you bought another bunch of books from another person by the same man, they would overlap a bit just by chance, and there was almost no overlap at all, almost none. They were all different. I thought, well, that's strange that you can do that, buy 10 one place, 25 another. But there was something even more than that. One of them was signed by the author. I said, hey, what can you imagine? And the guy said, I got one of them. He's actually signed by the author. That one's like $1.10. You know, that's a precious novel. So I went out, picked it up, and I'm looking at this thing. I took it home, and I'm reading, you know, it's a greetings. And I tried to figure it out, and finally, I knew what I thought it said. I took it up to Derek, and I said, Derek, what does this say? No, I didn't say a word to him. He looked at me and said, to Dari, J.T. Edson. I said, no, because I wanted to make sure I wasn't going crazy. I said, to Dari, you know, best wishes, J.T. Edson. I said, that's not possible. Well, I kept looking at it, and I figured out it must have been to Dave. But the V isn't a V. The V is an R. And it absolutely, if you just showed it to anybody, like I did Derek, it says to Dari. I told Dari, he said, I knew God would do this for me. He would, this is God's gift. I'm telling you, it is unbelievable. It didn't say to Edward III, you know. It says to Dari. So I looked a little further, found six more on eBay. Different titles again. There's one or two books that overlap. And most of these are ones he's never read because he loaned some of these out and the books were gone that he had. Then a few of them got destroyed. Remember the flood when his house flooded? A few of them got wet and got destroyed. And he only has a couple of books left. So I went out. There's six on eBay. Someone had already bid on those 99 cents because they're very worthwhile books. So I outbid him. I bid $1.04 and I won. $1.04. Now, I had to pay $4 shipping, and you're back to $1 a book about, you know. On they come. I just said, you know, I can't hardly believe it. I can't believe it. Something so simple as that. Do you think that God doesn't care? He cares a lot. He cares about little things. And we worry about the big things. We worry about losing our lives. And God says, you can't lose your life unless I allow so. You won't suffer apart from me knowing what your circumstances are. I thought it was just absolutely incredible. I don't think God really cares about J.T. Edson novels per se, but he cares about Dari. He cares about you and me. Psalm 37. I don't know why I never get what I want. Psalm 37. Well, we don't want to talk about that. Michelle knows. Michelle's teasing me. I have some dear friends that are going climbing, and I can't go. And I was exercising rather vigorously, and she says, I know what you're doing. You're just hoping, aren't you? I go, no, I'm just working out. Yeah, ran 28 miles last week. Just casual. She says, I know what you're like. But anyway, Psalm 37, verse number 1. Do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of the workers of iniquity. For they shall soon be cut down like grass and wither as the green herb. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and feed on his faithfulness. Feed on it. Feed on the trust in God. Delight yourself also in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Okay, I've mentioned before, maybe we don't get the little red sports car. Well, maybe we do. Again, it depends. Verse number 5, commit your way to the Lord, trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. He shall bring forth your righteousness as the light and your justice as the noonday. Rest in the Lord. That means to be at peace. It means not to thrash around and worry, not to be disconcerted or frustrated. Rest in the Lord. Wait patiently for him. Don't fret because of him who prospers in his way. Because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass, cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. It only causes harm. Now, we know it only causes harm, but he says, rest in the Lord. Don't fret. It only causes harm, doesn't change anything. For evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait on the Lord shall inherit the earth. For yet a little while, and the wicked shall be no more. Indeed, you will look diligently for his place, it shall be no more. But the meek shall inherit the earth, and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. Delightful. Imagine that. Verse 23, the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord. It means he helps you place your feet. It means he helps you direct your paths. He delights in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down. For the Lord upholds him with his hand. Verse 34. Wait on the Lord. It keeps saying you got to be though willing to wait. To wait on God, because you see God's never early and he's never late. He's perfect. Wait on the Lord and keep his way, and he shall exalt you to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, you shall see it. I have seen the wicked in great power and spreading himself like a native green tree. Yet he passed away, and behold, he was no more. Sounded great, looked great for a moment, but it didn't last. Indeed, I sought him, but he could not be found. Mark the blameless man. Observe the upright. Look at the long run. Look at what happens in the end. For the future of that man is peace, but the transgressors shall be destroyed together. The future of the wicked shall be cut off, but the salvation of the righteous is from the Lord. He is their strength in time of trouble, and the Lord shall help them and deliver them. He shall deliver them from the wicked and save them because they trust in him. Don't be afraid, God said. I'll take care. Rest in me. I will bring you peace. We are headed to what appears to me and others into some very seriously hard times. Let us do our part, but let us not also then be afraid. Let's trust God and trust God to do his part, which is what really counts anyway, is it not? Look at the example in 2 Kings chapter 6. What have you lost in this life? What are you missing? What is it that you would really desire, if God would allow so, for you to have back? 2 Kings 6, verse number 1. The sons of the prophets said to Elisha, "See now, the place where we dwell with you is too small for us. Please, let us go to the Jordan, let every man take a beam from here, there. Let us make there a place where we may dwell." He said, "Go." One said, "Please, consent to go with your servants." He said, "Okay, I will go." He went with them, and when they came to the Jordan, they cut down trees. And as one was cutting down a tree, an iron axe head fell into the water, which was very difficult to replace in those days, clearly. And he cried out and said, "Alas, master, it was borrowed." And the man of God said, "Where did it fall?" He showed him the place. So he cut off a stick, threw it in the water, and he made the iron float. Now, God made the iron float. Therefore, he said, "Pick it up for yourself." And he reached out his hand and took it. I've used the story when I was at SCP camp as a counselor, and one of the young men in my dorm wanted something from the dormitory, which was locked up, and I had the key. And the key was on my keychain for my little car and in my pocket, and for whatever reason, I had one set of keys and no backup of any kind. I'm in northern Minnesota, and it's not where you want to lose your keys. But just the same, I had my keys, and the key for the dorm was on it, and he said, "I have to go back to the dorm to get whatever it was." I handed him the keys, and I said, "Listen, don't you lose these? If you lose these, your parents will not have the benefit of you coming home. You be careful with these keys. You go straight to the dorm. You get what you want. You come straight back to me. You do not do anything else. You bring me back my keys. These are the only keys I have to my car." All right. Now, life goes on. You're swimming in the swimming hole there right on the side of the lake. And after a while, I look out, and this young man was out in the water swimming around, jumped back in and was participating back in the activity. And I called him over to shore, and I said, come here. I said, "Where's my keys?" He goes, "Oh, no." And he grabbed his pocket, and they were gone. He'd run back in, jumped in the lake. The keys came out of his pocket somehow into the lake. This is Orr, Minnesota. The water is not clear. It is mud on the bottom, plus its entire swimming area surrounded by the docks. And the keys were gone. And I said, "Find me the keys." In my normal, balanced manner. And he went and he got himself a face mask on. And he dove into the water. And he went to the bottom. And he looked around. And there they were. Right there, first dive, picks them up, brings them back, handed them to me. I don't know, maybe you remember the story of Alan when he dumped the canoe in the river and all the gear fell out and the watches and everything scattered on down the river, and he used it as an example, or I did, both of us maybe, I don't remember. And he didn't, he felt responsible because, you see, he was in the canoe and we were on floats, and so we gave him our gear to protect. He felt like, God, you know, I was entrusted with these things. And they're now at the bottom of the river. And he walked up and he found, and other people came and helped. Some of the kids that were in the river came and helped, and they found all those things. Just lay, oh, here's one, oh, here's another one. Now, those things could have washed halfway down to the Gulf, I suppose. But everything was returned. You know, God cares about us. He cares about the little things about us. He just says, don't be afraid. Trust me. Stay with me. Joe read the announcement that he had on Elsie Gibson. I had one Michelle gave me, which was a slight update, I think. I was going to use it actually for this part of to illustrate for my sermon. He read it. Maybe I can just mention it. It just said that when he fell off the roof, the paramedics arrived, but he was paralyzed. When they got there, he was paralyzed. Denny Luker anointed him while the paramedics were actually working on him. Went ahead and just anointed him in that place. Family went through a traumatic week with surgery to enlarge the spinal column. There were various up and downs, but Friday he's home. So Leanne said it was inspiring to see all the miracles and the healing from God. LG's home with only weakness in his left arm and hand. He was paralyzed. And God intervened. Doctors are hoping that therapy will correct that weakness. LG is self-employed. He does high-quality work on using his left hand. It's essential to his work. He's a wallpaper hanger. The family would appreciate your prayers for a speedy and complete recovery so he can return to work. So life's not perfect. But boy, is life better than it was. And did God intervene in a dramatic way? You know, God has blessed all of us in many, many ways. We could go through our lives and we could all pull out examples of times when God interceded on our behalf. When he gave us the desire of our heart. Even something so small as some little particular book or a set of books. Just for our pleasure. God has done that in so many ways. As I said, we are a church. We're a spiritual community. We are walking into some risks and times when we're going to have to be willing to look out and also care for each other as well. Keep your eye on each other so that when there is need, if there is, chances are great that there will be, that we will be there to intercede one for another. Don't be afraid doesn't just mean that God himself intercedes. It might mean that he intercedes through each one of us. We have to protect and care for and look out for one another in that way. Joshua chapter 1, verse number 1. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, and Moses' assistant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise. Go over this Jordan. What does the Jordan River portray? What does the promised land portray? It portrays the kingdom of God. In portrayal, they're walking on over into the kingdom of God. Except it was in this flesh. Go over this Jordan, you and all the people, to the land that I am giving them, the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you, as I said to Moses. Those who trusted God inherited the lands he promised to them. Those who did not trust in God did not inherit those lands. Giants and enemies and wild animals continued to inhabit those places that God had promised to them because they did not trust him. But Caleb, a servant of God, was blessed to inherit all of his lands and overcame all of his enemies in every single way. From the wilderness and this Lebanon as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, this is speaking about an area larger than what Israel ever occupied in that day. All the land of the Hittites down to the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your territory. No man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and of good courage. We must do our part. What is on your list? What have you done in 2 weeks that maybe should have been done before but is being done now? If not, what needs to be done? What will you write tonight? No man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. I was with Moses, I will be with you, I will not leave or forsake you. Be strong and of good courage, for to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous. Do not draw back. Do not turn away. That you may observe to do all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left. Don't fudge. Don't compromise. Don't hold back. That you may prosper wherever you go. The book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, that you may observe to do to all that is written in it, according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and you will have good success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Don't be afraid. Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Wherever you go. Back then, they were walking into the promised land. In that sense, today, we are walking into or toward the kingdom of God. Be not afraid.